everyone, and welcome to Celebrating Cinema, a podcast for the love of cinema. I'm your host, Laura Romans. Do you have a controversial opinion about film? Send a brief voice note to celebratingcinema@lab111.nl, and you might be featured in one of our upcoming episodes to see if we agree. This month, Brokeback Mountain is getting a re-release. The Ang Lee drama starring Jake Gyllenhaal and Heath Ledger won 3 Academy Awards in 2006 and was much talked about. Now, 20 years later, we reflect on the tragic cowboy drama and look at it in the context of queer cinema as a whole. We invited culture expert S.J. Uy to discuss the past and future of how we tell queer stories. First, I'd love to tell you about some cool things going on here at Lab 111 in Amsterdam. For the Dutchies and hip-hop fans, on the 25th of February, we are screening The Making of the Jeugd van Tegenwoordig with a Q&A with Pepijn Lane. And if you liked our Shakespeare episode from a few weeks ago, we are bringing Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet back to the screen for its 30th anniversary. Get your tickets at lab111.nl or through the link in the show notes. SJ, thanks for coming.
Hello.
Love that you're here. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Of course. Hi, I'm SJ. SJ Uy. My name is far longer, but it's much easier to say SJ. I am Filipino-Chinese. I'm a creator living here in Amsterdam only 2 months, and I love all things books and movies, and I talk about that on the internet. And specifically, translated media and queer media are ones that are very close to my heart. As someone who grew up in Manila, moved to Bangkok, and now living in Amsterdam as a queer individual, these are pieces of media that I wish a lot more people get to experience and appreciate.
Amazing. So we're here today to discuss Brokeback Mountain. But first, SJ, you wrote a little introduction for us.
Of course. How can a body hold so much grief? There's a movie scene from one of my favorite movies of all time. It's Leslie Cheung's head all bandaged up, resting on Tony Leung's shoulders from the backseat of a taxi. They're on the way home from the hospital after Leslie got into a fight. That doesn't sound quite right. They're in Buenos Aires, thousands of miles away from home, running away from Hong Kong, family, societal expectations, or each other. This movie scene is from Happy Together, or in Mandarin, Chun Quang Jia Xie, one of my favorite movies of all time, and my favorite queer movie of all time. Which brings us to the question, why is queer media so sad? When I look at my all-time favorite books, plays at eye level when standing in front of a bookshelf, you see a trend, the gray cover, limbs of queer individuals, and you see the same thing with my favorite movies. When you look at my letterbox, they won't be any different. Queer media is a space I'll always go out of my way to consume. Books, movies, music, and more. It's a space that has given me the most beautiful glimpses of humanity, and the one that has shown me the most amount of empathy. And I've been at the receiving end of this empathy many times over, and I've made growing up queer far easier than most people have it. I recognize that. This is why queer media holds a special place in my heart, and is a space I actively try to give a platform to, with the little I have. And I take this empathy and bring it to those who need it the most. The funny thing is, it is also the one that has brought me so much pain. It shouldn't be too difficult to wrap your head around if you think deeply about the queer experience throughout the years. Yes, it is a space in fiction that has one too many sad stories and narratives. It is a group of people that has one too many sad narratives and stories. I have been holding this thought for many years now, whenever the topic of the sadness of queer media comes about. The very first draft of this ramble came a little over 2 years ago, during my first time reading Notes of a Crocodile by Qiu Miaojin, a brilliant Taiwanese writer that was unapologetically lesbian, writing two works so essential to the literary canon, especially within the Asian LGBT community. And this was at a time and place when identifying as such came with a lot more risks than what your freedom would afford you. And the sad reality is with a space rooted on people who have a long history of fighting for a voice in society, dealing with oppression that remains present in many parts of the world today, is that you have artists shaped by these stories. The older generation of queer artists today are the same ones that lived their formative years during some of the darkest times in queer history. And to some, still is. So we're presented with tragic works of queer media. When you have artists that are shaped by tough and difficult times, whether they were forced to hide, suppress, adjust, or they were able to fight for their rights and stand tall, they each have their stories. Alas, we are presented with beautiful and heartbreaking pieces of tragic queer media. Powerful queer media. Queer media that reminds us of the difficult history that afforded us the relative freedom of today. The voice of generations who did not have the relative privilege of today's youth, and are only now able to take more of their stories and bring them to light. And I think that's heartbreaking, but I also think that's beautiful. The question is, don't we deserve to have more hopeful and lighthearted Burkes? Of course. There's so much joy to the queer experience. The youth of today deserve to see narratives that not only paint the queer experience in a positive light, but paint it in a normal manner. Not as the groundbreaking core of a story, but simply a matter-of-fact aspect to it. Something that can bring hope and normalcy to the queer youth. And there might not be a lot of happy queer stories, I recognize that. But they're there, and there's value in them, both the sad stories and the happy stories. Sad queer stories paint a picture of the realities the community goes through, while the happy queer stories paint a picture of what could be. Hope, despite being a beautiful thing, can be the biggest struggle of them all. Though, how else do you wake up each day without the hope of possibility? So is there too much pain in queer media? Yes, because there's also too much pain in its history. Sometimes I wonder how a body could hold so much grief. It can't. Something has to carry this collective grief. Both our histories and our lost experiences. And I think that's what media is for.
That was great. That was great. So yeah, you spoke a lot about tragedy. I think there's a lot of tragedy in the movie that we're about to discuss. So Brokeback Mountain is being re-released 20 years later. It will also be screening here at Lab 111.
Yeah, we'll try this one. And I'll say it just once.
Go ahead.
Tell you what, we could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. Had us a place of our own. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is Brokeback Mountain. Everything's built on that. That's all we got, boy. Fucking all. So I hope you know that if you don't never know the rest. You count the damn few times that we have been together in nearly 20 years, and you measure the short fucking leash you keep me on, and then you ask me about Mexico, and you tell me you kill me for needing something I don't hardly never get.
What does this movie mean to you? What do you remember your first encounter with it?
When the movie first came out, I think I was around 7 or 8 years old, and obviously I was not watching it at the time, but it was always there. When you think about queer media, Brokeback Mountain is always one of the first encounters you would have with the space. And I remember first trying to watch it when I was around 15, 16 years old, and I never got around to finishing it. But I do know how it ends, and it was a movie that was always on my mind when I was growing up.
Because you say that for everyone around the world, basically, it is one of their first experiences maybe with queer cinema. This was an incredibly mainstream movie. As I mentioned in the intro, it won 3 Oscars. Do you think this movie was truly groundbreaking, or did it just benefit from having a big director, big actors? What do you think made this movie so big at the time?
When you look at Brokeback Mountain and how it would sometimes be called palatable, It helps with how big and mainstream it got. Yeah. And with the story, when you put forward a queer story, regardless if it's because of a big director, big actors that you're having, at the end of the day, you're being able to make the queer narrative something that is more of a household name, especially when it was winning a lot of the Oscars. Mm-hmm. I think that's a net positive that you're seeing.
Yeah, because this is a story that is set over a few decades, mostly in the 60s. And, you know, in that time, it wasn't as common to be out. When this movie came out, it was also kind of said that it furthered the kind of queer tragedy trope. Is there a way to even tell these stories, or like, what would you say the importance of that story is to go back to the 60s and see how queer men would live in that time?
I think when you try to avoid queer tragedy, or we just make a stereotype like, every single gay story is sad, You're kind of denying the history of the queer experience. There was the AIDS crisis, many parts of the world today, it's still illegal, and I think with a movie like Brokeback Mountain, to make something that was not really normal many, many decades ago, honestly, just even many years ago, To be something that's mainstream now and people are able to talk about freely, and for it to be winning an Oscar, an award that usually reserved for something a lot more normalized. I don't know if normalized is the right word. I think it's a big win for the queer community. And yes, it is a tragic story, but it is a tragic history.
I think there's also a lot of beauty in the story, because even though these men couldn't exactly be who they wanted, they had such a strong connection that they like kept meeting up every year. And it ends with a lot of love, even though the tragedy happens, which for the people who haven't seen it, I won't spoil exactly what the tragedy is. But I do feel in the end, it just like does hold the space for this everlasting love that these two have. So in a way, it is also beautiful and hopeful, even though it doesn't exactly end well for them. One thing that was also discussed around Brokeback Mountain at the time is that, as far as we know, Jake Gyllenhaal and Heath Ledger at that time were not out gay men. They presented as straight, at least. How do you feel, because that's often discussed, how do you feel about straight actors playing gay characters?
This is a question I've been really thinking about for many years already. Not only with just straight actors, but directors, writers, being able to tell queer narratives. And then that question becomes less of an important factor for me when I think about what happened with Heartstopper and Kit Connor. Heartstopper was a beautiful, beautiful queer series that was out a few years ago. And Kit Connor was forcibly outed during that period because people were speculating, is he straight? Is he gay? Why does a straight actor get to play a queer character? And through that process, he was forcibly outed. And we always say that queer people should be able to come out at their own time.
Right.
And yet when we look at these pieces of media, we always speculate, we always ask these questions that at the end of the day, is it really that important when you look at it from the lens of we're presenting a queer story?
Yeah. And I feel like maybe as long as the story resonates with queer people, it's, as I think you said earlier, it's a net positive.
Exactly.
Like we never know if someone's queer or straight and they shouldn't be forced to be outed just in order to play a role. There's many examples of straight, as far as we know, straight actors playing roles that have made a huge impact on getting the queer narrative out there for people, maybe a little bit more in the mainstream. But I was also thinking about how many out gay actors do we really have in like A-list Hollywood? It's quite a disappointing percentage. Is that something that you wish there was just more of, that it was, why do you think it is maybe, because if you look at the statistics of how many queer A-list actors we have, statistically, it doesn't check out. Why do you think maybe a lot of actors aren't out?
So I look at it from two lenses. One is the obvious, which is that living queer and out is not the easiest thing to do. I think even if you're not an actor, there's a lot of weight that comes with coming out. So I think that's a given. And on the other hand, when you're in the limelight, there's a lot more pressure. And that's not only because you are queer, but also because you will start thinking, will this limit me to only queer stories? Which is, if you are queer, you would love to be part of those queer narratives, yeah. But would that only mean that you're only going to be part of those same stories?
Right. And there's obviously, you mentioned trans individuals. We have luckily quite a few examples now of actors who are trans and out. Yeah. But if you open a comment section, it's all people
nasty.
Talk about. And it's, you know, it's really terrible how, you know, being in the limelight, as you say, just really reminds you of how many people still have a problem with
So surprising, because when you look at the world today, you think we've gone so far from where we were before. But then you look at these comment sections and people can still be very nasty. And definitely more with trans individuals, but even with queer, gay, and lesbians, you would be surprised with those comment sections.
Mm-hmm.
They're not safe spaces.
They're not safe spaces. So in recent years, we've had quite a few bigger hit movies around queer narratives. Things like Moonlight, All of Us Strangers, Call Me By Your Name. Again, a lot of those revolve around sadness.
Yes.
And, you know, these narratives. And I think before Brokeback, we also had movies like Philadelphia, which also is very tragic, and that's also about the AIDS epidemic. And I think something you beautifully mentioned earlier is that this older generation of queer artists lived through this incredibly traumatic time. I recently heard Tilda Swinton talk about Derek Jarman and how in that time she had about 40 queer friends that passed away. It's an event that is almost unimaginably sad to us in these times. But yeah, do you see a big influence of the AIDS epidemic on what kinds of stories have been told through that generation?
Oh, definitely. I think the AIDS epidemic and just the difficult history the queer community experienced throughout the years is still being seen in all forms of media today. I just finished reading a book titled Nova Scotia House the other day, and it was also centering like the AIDS epidemic and a couple. The partners passed away. And to this day, I've read so many books and I've watched so many movies that are about this queer experience. And it continues to be painful. You would think that, again, people always say there's so much queer narratives. but they're still alive and they're still telling their stories. And the thing is, there's still so much more to uncover. Yes, it is unfortunate that, yes, why is queer media a lot more depressing and a lot more tragic? But the thing is, that is the history. And you cannot erase that. And there are still so many more stories and so many more people who are trying to unpack this, who are trying to understand their own experiences and put this and make people understand, like, yes, maybe it is a little bit better today, but this is what we went through. This is not to tell you that this is your future, but it is something that you have to honor. This is the community that built the rights and everything that you have today. Yeah. And I think that's very, very important.
It is always important to remember the history, but as you mentioned, you had quite an okay time growing up as a queer kid. Do you think that influences how the next generation, your generation, tells stories about their queer experience?
Dear God, I hope. I have seen so many nice, warm, and even bad queer movies. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate all of those, even the bad ones. It is so nice to watch a queer movie or read a gay book that is not just sad.
A good example of that is something we were talking about before we started recording. Heated Rivalry is one of the biggest hits. I can't tell you how many middle-aged white ladies told me to watch Heated Rivalry. So this is something that is so in the mainstream. It's so in meme culture. It's so it's everywhere right now. How do you feel about something like Heated Rivalry?
Oh, I love it. It's hot, steamy, and it's fun. It's not something so serious. Yes, mm-hmm. It does tackle parts of the queer experience, but it's still important to discuss. But the main focus of it is it's fun. It is able to tackle these difficult themes without sacrificing the entertainment. And I think whether it's middle-aged women or my gay friends are able to enjoy it, it's a net positive.
You recently watched it. You enjoyed it?
I finished it last week in one night, all six episodes.
Oh my God. Yeah, it gets steamy as hell. I was quite almost like shocked when the episode starts. It takes about 4.5 minutes for them to start.
And almost every single episode, you're just like, wow, they cleared this. And I love it.
Yeah.
I love it for the queer community.
So if we focus more towards like younger generations who didn't maybe live through all these incredible tragedies, we get a lot more uplifting stories. I think one that I would love to mention is God's Own Country. Yes. I think it's very great to watch maybe as a double bill with Brokeback Mountain because it is also about two farmers. However, and this is not too big of a spoiler, this doesn't have as much tragedy. It has the internal struggle. For those of you who don't know, God's Own Country is a British romance movie set on a sheep farm in Yorkshire. It follows this farmer, Johnny, played by Josh O'Connor, who is not really in a great place. He's numbing himself with drinking and empty hookups. And then George comes around. He's a Romanian migrant worker who shows up to help on the farm. They start a relationship that's kind of rough and guarded at first, but it could possibly turn into more if they just let someone in and accepted who they are. I won't say if that's what happens, but maybe that's what happens. I thought this was such a delightful movie. It does have a lot of similarities, also visually kind of with Brokeback Mountain. There's a lot of sheep. So I think those are the two movies with the most sheep.
Probably.
That I've seen in my
life. Watching it together, you said, great idea.
Yeah.
Great idea. Depends on the mood that you want to be in. If you want to be sad after or not as sad after.
I had this one when I rewatched Brokeback Mountain this week. And then it ends and I was just sobbing. And then they throw this Willie Nelson song at you that just like prolongs the crying. Yes. And I was just like, okay.
Reminds me of the ending of Call Me By Your Name as well. You're just there. You're just like staring at.
Not now, Sufjan Stevens.
But also like, give me more.
Yeah. I want to wallow. Do you have any more examples of queer movies that feel more uplifting?
Yes, there is one that I love and I've watched it like 3-4 times because it's just such a precious movie. It's a Brazilian movie. It's titled The Way He Looks. And it's about two young boys. One of them is blind and they get into this little puppy love. And you would expect such story to be not so sad. You have the queer experience and you have someone who's disabled as well. And I'm not going to spoil it for you, but I've watched it 3-4 times. So I'm not that much of I'm not a masochist.
Right.
But it's a movie that really is hold near and dear whenever I think about, yes, there's a lot of queer tragedy, but there's a lot of space for such movies like this as well. And there's another layer to, I think, queer media that I really appreciate is because you have these people who have gone through so many things in their life, they also get a lot of empathy for not only their experiences, but also those that are adjacent to them. You have God's Own Country with a migrant experience, and then you have the way he looks with someone who is blind. And I've always appreciated this from queer directors and queer writers, is that they're able to discuss queer narratives not in isolation, but recognizes that intersectionality, and we don't just suffer because of one thing, but that everything is connected, yeah. And they're able to bring forth these important stories.
Yeah, and in your introduction, you also mentioned Happy Together by Wong Kar-wai. Do you want to tell me a little bit about how special that movie is to you?
Do not get me started.
I will.
I was just telling you earlier that I have a tattoo of it. That's how much I love it. You guys are rescreening it as well, and I plan on watching it sometime this week. And I just finished rewatching it last month, so...
That's how much you love it.
Exactly.
Oh my God, is the tattoo in a place where we can see it right now? Whoa!
It's them dancing. Okay, there. Now it's...
Oh,
that
is
so. That looks like a picture that was laser printed on it.
It is. It is Tony Leung and Leslie Cheung dancing.
That's crazy.
It's one of my favorite movie scenes of all time.
Wow.
I mean, it's on my body, so.
That's really nice. How much means to you that you want to rewatch it again? You watched it again last month. What is it about this movie that makes you want to go back to it again and again?
I think growing up as a queer Asian boy in Manila, you don't really get a lot of queer stories in that part of the world as much as you do in the West. And the closest you would get that from is Happy Together, which is not a happy movie. Don't get me wrong. If you think about it, it was released in 1997 by Wong Kar-wai, a publicly straight director, featuring two blockbuster actors, Tony Leung and Leslie Cheung. I always look at that movie with so much like respect, because it was a risk in Asia, in Hong Kong specifically, to release such a story. I think not only the contents of that movie that I really, really love, but just the whole context of it is something I've really, really respected. And it brings me a lot of comfort that even though, yes, I didn't have the most difficult time growing up as queer, I do know that that's not the reality for many other people. That for a queer story to be out in Asia by a widely respected director and two actors that I love and respect was something that I've always, always really loved.
Maybe for people here in the West, we're missing a little bit of context about how big these actors are and how famous they are. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, exactly. That's basically like Tom Cruise acting in a gay movie in 1997. Mm-hmm. And the article that I was reading earlier, one of the main triggers of that actually was Leslie Cheung, one of the blockbuster actors that acted in Happy Together. And yes, I give this movie so much love, and I think it was so brave of them to do. But a few years after filming this movie, he actually died by suicide. And no one can really say what the main reason is, but he is a publicly out part of the LGBT community. And one can assume that it's probably one of the main reasons that happened to him. And it really just shows that complexity of the queer experience. And for a movie like Happy Together that I've already hold near and dear, to have this whole story and experiences both in the context of it but in its narrative, it's something that I just revisit every single year. Yes, every single year, that even though yes, it is sad, it is something that I do think is very important.
Yeah, and it is such a powerful story, because as you say, it came out in 1997. Again, we are, what, is it 30 years? We're getting so old. We're almost 30 years later, and we are still screening it here at Lab 111. So it is a story that really echoes through time and is still considered one of the most important movies in queer history. Another thing that I read in your Substack is that you mentioned some TV things like Queer as Folk and Shameless and Sense8. What made those stories special to you?
It's very interesting that you mentioned that, because at the start of this podcast, I mentioned that when I first watched Brokeback Mountain, I didn't really get to finish it. I'm not entirely sure why. I really loved it, but I was really seeking out a lot more TV shows because I wanted to live with these characters. Right. You get to spend a lot more time with them. And I don't think at that age, when I was a teenager, that I was looking for a lot of queer movies, or not that they were that available as well. But these TV shows give you a lot of time to just spend with them. And when you're growing up as queer and you don't really have a lot of people to look up to or people to empathize with you, these TV shows that run for so many episodes and so many seasons become kind of like your friends, and they bring a lot of comfort and normalcy, which I feel like is not always present in the queer experience.
Right, because in a movie you have to condense it all into, what, 2 hours? So basically movies will focus more maybe on the tragic or the hiding or the sadness. And I think...
And it ends.
And it ends. And in these shows, you get to spend, what, 8 years with a character that's just queer and going about their business. And
you will have filler episodes where nothing is happening and they're just being human beings. And yes, people complain about them, but I personally love them.
Don't you miss filler episodes?
Exactly, yes. Not everyone's just about like, this plot, all the time. Plot.
There's an episode of Gilmore Girls where Rory loses a bracelet. And she looks for the bracelet. And I'm like, man, now with Prestige TV, I feel like everything has to be like
moving.
1 hour episodes. And it has to be. And yeah, I think maybe in that we are losing a little bit of that. Let's just spend time with these people going about their business.
When friends warn me about a TV show and they're like, oh, I should just be warned. There's a couple of fillers there. Same with Gilmore Girls. My friends warn me. And I'm just like, I want those.
Only fillers. Give exactly. me only the fillers.
Exactly.
I just want to hang out. Maybe that's why people love reality TV.
Oh, I do too.
I mean, couldn't be me, but I get what it's it is fun. About it. Are there any examples of queerness in movies that you love that might not be so outright queer?
Oh, I love this question because one of my four favorite movies of all time fits within that category. It's in my Letterboxd four favorites. And I cannot count how many times I have Googled, is E Tu Mama Tambien a queer movie? Because I would be talking to someone and they'd be like, no, it's not. And I'd be like, excuse me, it is the gayest movie in the world.
Yeah.
And I also think about a Studio Ghibli movie, an animated production company. Mm-hmm. And you have their movie Ocean Waves, which is not, again, an outright queer movie, but it has so much queer undertones that I'm just like, this is the gayest Studio Ghibli movie I've ever seen. And it gets a lot of flack, but I love that movie. It's not everyone's favorite. They say it's not his best work, but I love it. And I find queerness in it. And I love finding queerness in a lot of different media that are not outright queer.
Right. Can you talk a little bit more about like why E Tu Mama Tambien is so special to you?
One thing I've always really loved about E Tu Mama Tambien is the same thing with other queer movies, is that intersectionality. It's not only talking about the queer experience. And yes, I'm not saying it is queer, but you have these two guys who are going on a little road trip with an older woman. One of them is privileged, one of them is not. And it sounds like a normal road trip movie, but then you see the context of Mexico's politics on the background that kind of mirrors their own internal struggles, and which is why I consider it a queer movie. Because you see a lot of these internal struggles that they have within themselves, but also with each other. Yes, you have Luisa, the woman there, but you also see their dynamics. And I've always appreciated that about E Tu Mama Tambien, is it hides so many of these layers that if you just watch it without really thinking about anything, some people would call it soft porn, which is a categorization I loathe about E Tu Mama Tambien, because it's a movie I love and adore. And I think it's much, much deeper than that. It tackles so much politics, underlying queerness, that I think gets brushed off because of how provocative it could be.
You mentioned earlier your Letterboxd top four. I would love to know what other movies are in your Letterboxd top four.
Oh God, I have two of those tattooed on my body. So I love these movies. Of course, I have Happy Together. Mm-hmm. I also have E Tu Mama Tambien.
Yeah.
Then I have Gigi, which you guys screened last
month.
25th year anniversary. I have a tattoo of it on my back.
Really?
It's my favorite movie of all time. Like number one. I flew to Taiwan for the Edward Yang exhibit for my birthday. That's
oh my
God. How much I love it. It was amazing.
Oh, we love that movie. We did a whole episode about this movie. It's so great.
I watched it. I listened to it yesterday.
Elliot's review was like, it changed my life. Yeah.
It changed mine too. Yeah. And then my last one, and I'm putting on a personal request. I've been checking Cineville every other day for when are you guys going to be screening it? Drive My Car.
Oh.
Ryosuke Hamaguchi.
I think that's hard because it's like 1,000 hours long, so it's hard to slot it in sometimes to scheduling, but...
Not long enough.
Those are great choices. It's been 20 years since Brokeback Mountain. Where do you hope queer cinema will be in another 20 years?
I have no serious answer for you. I just want more of the sad stories, more of the happy stories, more of the boring stories. And even the bad movies.
Right.
I think we just need more queer narratives, and I think that's going to be great for queer media as a whole.
Brokeback Mountain is currently screening at Lab 111, and you can get your tickets at lab111.nl or through the link in the show notes.
Stay connected with us at Celebrating Cinema and Lab by following at Lab111 on Instagram and Letterboxd. Do you love what we do? Support us by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us climb the ranks of the podcast charts.
This was a Lab 111 production, edited and produced by Elliot Bloom, and co-produced by myself, Laura Romans. Music comes from Hugo Emmertzell, and the artwork is by Studio FFF.